Minnesota news on your schedule, on your device. It's the NPR News Update. Greetings. I'm Phil Picardi on this Tuesday, October 15th. Today on the podcast, in addition to all the news, Min Schur readies a progress report, and a fear of concussions may be leading parents to steer their young kids into a sport other than football. Republicans in the Minnesota Senate are calling on DFL leaders to hold a hearing to address their concerns about a new online voter registration system. GOP lawmakers have accused DFL Secretary of State Mark Ritchie of overstepping his authority when he launched the system last month without specific direction from the state legislature. Senate Minority Leader David Hahn, a Republican of Eden Prairie, and Republican Senator Scott Newman of Hutchinson have asked the chair of the Subcommittee on Elections to hold a hearing within the next week. Hahn also wants Ritchie to stop implementing the new system.
I think doing it on his own is not the way to do this, and it really raises concerns about something that should be addressed in a bipartisan way, in an open way, so that the public has confidence in the election system. It shouldn't be done by the Secretary of State on his own.
Ritchie has previously cited a 13-year-old law for the authority to launch the new system, but the legislative auditor last week said the statute was not directly intended to authorize online voter registration. State Representative Phyllis Kahn says she's sponsoring a bill to buy the Minnesota Orchestra. Kahn, a DFLer from South Minneapolis, is suggesting the state form a corporation to take over the orchestra and then sell stock to the public, a la the Green Bay Packers. Kahn says she will introduce the bill during the next legislative session, and it may well evolve before then.
I would hope so. You know, any introduced a bill is a first idea. And I would hope that people will look at it, will think about the concept.
Kahn says the orchestra is a valuable asset which should be under community control. She has not contacted the Minnesota Orchestral Association, which runs the orchestra. The orchestra locked out its musicians over a year ago after failing to reach a contract agreement. St. Paul's Penumbra Theater, which nearly collapsed during a financial crisis more than a year ago, has released an audit. For the fiscal year ending June 30th, the audit shows Penumbra finished the year with a surplus of almost $131,000. Now, Penumbra once had a deficit of more than $1 million. Penumbra Managing Director Chris Wittes says the turnaround is due to a successful fundraising campaign.
I think the most significant statement, though, is that majority of that money, over 60% of that money, came from individuals, which is the first time in Penumbra's history that the majority of the funding has come from individuals.
Wittes says the theater also has developed a new 5-year business plan to go into effect next year. A report released today finds charitable giving has been rising in Minnesota in recent years. The Minnesota Council on Foundations reports foundations, corporate charities, and individuals from Minnesota gave $5.5 billion in 2011, the most recent data available. Many foundations are seeing an upswing in giving following the recession. Minnesota Philanthropy Partners Vice President Jeremy Wells says his organization cut grants during the recession.
We certainly saw individuals taking a lot longer to make gifts, but I think, you know, especially over the last few years, I think we're certainly back up to where we were pre-recession.
Foundations and corporations awarded $1.7 billion in 2011. That was up 15% from the year before. The largest share of the charitable giving went to support education. Minnesota teachers hold their annual 2-day professional conference Thursday and Friday here in St. Paul. Tim Post reports.
This year's conference, held Thursday and Friday at the St. Paul River Center, will feature speeches and seminars on the achievement gap, teacher evaluations, student mental health, bullying, and new approaches in the classroom. It's organized by the State Teachers Union Education Minnesota and is open to the public. As many as 10,000 people are expected to attend the conference. Some Minnesota districts also hold professional development meetings at their schools during the conference. It all means 2 days off for Minnesota students, creating a 4-day vacation still known as MEA weekend for many, although that's a term the teachers' union hasn't used for over a decade. Tim Post, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A woman is suing a St. Paul priest she says sexually abused her when she was a teenager. Attorney Jeff Anderson has filed the lawsuit on behalf of an unnamed woman in Ramsey County. It accuses the Reverend Michael Keating of abusing her when he was in the seminary in the late 1990s. Anderson says the woman reported the claims to the Twin Cities Archdiocese in 2006, but was treated poorly.
We're deeply disturbed and very alarmed, not only by what this man did to her and how it shaped her life, but more particularly by the failure of the Archbishop and the Archdiocese to address her and this very serious matter in a serious way.
Attorney Jeff Anderson. Keating is a professor at the University of St. Thomas. The Archdiocese says he is on leave. The Chisago County Sheriff's Office investigated the woman's claims in 2006, and no charges were filed. Overall occupancy in downtown St. Paul office units remains steady at about 90%. That's according to a new study from the Greater St. Paul Building Owners and Managers Association. But the group's Pat Wolf says it's unclear if the market can support an upscale office tower, which is one idea Mayor Chris Coleman has floated for the former Macy's site in downtown St. Paul.
I guess it's unclear to me. It depends on if that anchor tenant is coming from an existing building in downtown, in which case then that would open up a gap in that building and create more vacancy, or whether they're actually a new tenant.
The downtown St. Paul occupancy rate for privately owned multi-tenant office buildings is 80%. Coleman has been meeting with local developers and business leaders to help guide development at the Macy's site. A San Francisco-based real estate investment firm had plans to buy the building, but it is unclear if or when that deal will close. The Minnesota DNR is asking people on Duluth's Park Point not to feed wild foxes. Dan Crocker reports.
Foxes have lived for years on Park Point, the 7-mile spit of land that sticks out into Lake Superior beyond the aerial lift bridge. And DNR Assistant Area Wildlife Manager Martha Minchak says people have fed the foxes for years, but she's getting more and more calls from people complaining about it.
They're very, very tame, or acting very, very tame. And some folks think that's a great thing, and others are upset by it.
Minchak says she's heard reports of foxes stepping over people on the beach. Others have tried to enter homes and an assisted living center. She says public reaction is split. Some think they're a nuisance. Others like to see wild animals and encourage it by feeding them. It's against the law to feed bears and deer in Duluth, but not foxes or other wildlife. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
Now we go to Minsure. Minsure officials will unveil the number of people enrolling in health plans tomorrow. But insurers participating in the state's new health insurance marketplace won't receive enrollment data for a few more weeks. They were initially slated to get their first batch of data files today. Catherine Richard reports.
Minsure officials say they're still trying to figure out how to send new customer information to insurance companies selling plans on the exchange. It's a feature that should be operable by the end of the month. That information is critical because someone isn't officially enrolled in a plan until the insurer gets their information and their payment. Medica Vice President of Public Policy Jeff Bartsch said the delay is one his company is willing to accept. They'd rather make sure the transfer of information works correctly than risk getting bad data. Catherine Richard, Minnesota Public Radio News.
As mentioned, Minsure releases its first count of Minnesotans who have actually enrolled in health plans tomorrow. Until now, officials with the new online marketplace have only reported the number of accounts created. Minsure has been live for 2 weeks, and users have encountered a few glitches. Here's Elizabeth Stewicki.
This observation from Alana Gravitz, program manager at Hennepin County Human Services Department, sums up how many community organizations view Minsure right now.
Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work.
Minsure officials say the on-again, off-again problem stemmed from the so-called federal data hub, which insurance marketplaces such as Minsure must use to verify a person's income through the IRS. The hub has been overwhelmed and fussy in recent weeks, but when it is working, Gravitz says it automates the otherwise cumbersome enrollment process in Medicaid.
It's a great thing for the county. What it means is that eventually, as the system gets smoother and smoother, we'll be able to have the workers spend the time with clients that have more complex issues and more questions, and the folks who have more straightforward cases might be able to take care of things on their own.
Open Cities Health Center in St. Paul, which has a large clientele of non-English-speaking patients, has also had mixed results. Dorothy Herr, who's certified by Minsure to help people enroll in health plans, says the site seems pretty straightforward, but so far she hasn't been able to enroll anyone because of problems with the Minsure site in creating accounts. On the other hand, she says there hasn't been a lot of interest. She says not many of the organization's clients even know about Minsure.
I haven't heard much about it in the community, and not a lot of people know about it, especially, like, say, to the Hmong community or to the Somali community. We haven't had much education on it.
Minsure officials have lined up social service organizations focused on Somali and Hmong Americans to provide outreach to those populations, as well as others. But many of the outreach groups have said they're off to a slow start, in part because they need to complete required training and get certified by Minsure. Vanessa Vogel, Benefits Counseling Coordinator at the Minnesota AIDS Project, says the workers there had no expectations of Minsure when it first rolled out because it was such a big project to get up and running. But she says in the last week, they were not only able to create accounts on Minsure, but also sign up members of one family for the different types of private and government insurance offered through Minsure.
There's somebody enrolling into medical assistance and Minnesota Care and then a qualified health plan, actually. So it's kind of exciting for that reason.
And some people were pleasantly surprised because they really didn't expect Minsure to work. James Albrecht of Portico Health, a nonprofit that helps Minnesotans find health coverage, hasn't enrolled anyone on Minsure yet, but he says the system has surpassed his expectations anyway.
I was expecting to have more technological problems. I was thinking that, you know, we'd get too many people using the system and that the system would crash and be down for a couple of weeks. So I'm actually surprised that it's working as effectively as it is.
For some organizations, Minsure's gradual ramp up creating accounts has been a blessing because it's given them extra time to make sure assistants are well trained. But as one industry player puts it, your evaluation of Minsure at this point largely depends on what your expectations were at the outset.
Elizabeth Stawicki on the NPR News Update, Minnesota's news on your schedule. The number of kids playing tackle football appears to be on the decline. And here in the Twin Cities, some prominent youth football programs are trying to attract and keep players. NPR News and Care 11 surveyed 20 youth football programs in Minnesota, and reporter Tricia Volpe has been talking with coaches, parents, and players. She spoke with Kathy Werzer on Morning Edition.
The drop in numbers, let's put a face to this here, how big of a deal is this?
Well, certainly some very, very interesting results from the surveying that we did. Of the 16 programs that gave us participation numbers, about half of them have seen a drop in numbers over the last 5 years. That's anywhere from a fifth to a third fewer players today. And that includes football programs like Anoka, Ramsey, and Stillwater. But this is the number that was really shocking to all of us. Eden Prairie. We know in Eden Prairie, football is king, especially at the high school level with
big program.
Many, many, many state championship trophies. Well, the Eden Prairie Youth Football Association, third to eighth graders, has seen overall participation numbers drop more than 30% since 2008. Jay Hansen is head of the youth league.
I love the game of football, number one, and I wish we could get more kids to participate. We still have a very vibrant program, and, you know, it's not going anywhere.
And it definitely isn't going anywhere, but Hansen says the league is trying to figure out how to stop the decline now, because one of the league's main objectives, as you might imagine, is to get kids to the high school program.
That drop is pretty significant there. What are the reasons given? Do they know?
Well, Eden Prairie has been trying to figure all of this out. The biggest drop for them has been at the entry level. Not as many third graders are getting into the game. The league has been surveying parents, surveying students, interviewing them. They're looking for ways to make the game more fun, hoping that attracts younger players again. Now, I also spoke with several parents whose kids are not playing football anymore. The fear of injury, concussions is a top reason for pulling their kids out. Charlie asked, Ash has been playing for St. Anthony since he was in third grade, but decided this year not to play anymore after his parents told him he only had one more year left. His mother, Stephanie, tells me that the connection between football and head injuries was too much.
Kids are going to get hurt. They're going to get hurt at recess. You know, they're going to get hurt in your garage. But a head injury is different in my mind than, you know, a sprained wrist or a sprained ankle.
But fear of injury, really, Kathy, is only part of the story here. USA Football, this is youth football's national governing body. That organization has found that participation numbers are also going down because more kids are specializing in one sport and not choosing football. Other parents say it's just too expensive or there are way too many activities to choose from and their kids have to do something, and some of them aren't choosing football.
What are the leagues doing about this?
Well, as I mentioned, Eden Prairie is trying to keep the game fun. They've had some special events for younger kids to get them more interested in football. But improving safety, that is the biggest thing youth leagues are doing to get parents and their kids back. And it's not just better equipment. The leagues are actually changing the way kids practice, teaching them safer tackle techniques, for example. And coaches are getting special training to identify and respond to head injuries.
So we've been talking about programs that have seen big drops, but are there programs that are seeing increases?
Yeah, in fact, there are quite a few programs out there that are seeing some increases. I spent some time with the Little Panthers of Blaine Spring Lake Park. These are the third grade players. It's a program that has seen steady growth since 2008. Association President Phil Richard explains the key to success.
And we've just really taken it seriously that we've got to know what we're doing, we've got to know how to practice, and we have to know how to take care of these kids if they by chance have a head injury.
Blaine Spring Lake Park has also split second and third graders. They don't play together anymore because apparently they are very physically different.
All right. Interesting story. Good work.
Thank you very much.
Tricia Volpe and Kathy Werzer on Morning Edition. From football to basketball, the Minnesota Lynx got a warm reception from thousands of fans who turned out for the team's victory parade and rally in downtown Minneapolis yesterday. The Lynx swept the Atlanta Dream in the championship series, winning their second WNBA title in 3 years. Reporter Matt Sepik talked with fans greeting the league champions.
I'm standing here at 7th Street and Nicollet Avenue as the parade makes its way down the street toward the victory rally at Target Center. Time and again, when you ask Lynx fans what they like about the team, they'll tell you it's their collaborative style of play, the very definition of teamwork. That's what fan Thomas Cunningham says. He's among the thousands of people lining Nicollet Avenue for the parade today.
They are out there just out there to have fun. It's like the women is not too physical like men are. Like, even though they sometimes don't get the plays called, they just go on with it, just focus on what they got to do.
Simone Augustus and Maya Moore holding the trophy aloft as they pass in the back of a 1950s Cadillac down Nicollet Avenue past the IDS Tower. Justin Ferrara's here too with his mom, Donna Chandler.
We didn't watch much at the beginning. They were brand new. But we've been watching about 3 or 4 years.
They're great. They're fun to watch. They're good players. And they win.
Some of these players we didn't even know were going to be as good as they are. And they're just phenomenal on the court. And they all play well together.
Lynx fan Portia Ramos, a season ticket holder, is here at the parade with friends. She says she's glad to see such great turnout today, but Ramos says the team deserves to have much bigger crowds at their games, especially in the postseason.
We were a little disappointed with that last championship game that we didn't have more people, and you know, you looked at it on television and it looked like there really weren't that many people there, and that was disappointing because I think they deserve more than we have given them, you know, as a community, in terms of just our presence.
The parade's now making its way into Target Center for the victory rally.
She's dominated the league for 7 years and helped lead her second championship run this season. Big fans, give it up for Simone!
Minnesota Lynx and their fans celebrating the team's second WNBA championship in 3 years with a parade and victory rally. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And I'm Phil Picardi in St. Paul for the NPR News Update. Wednesday news right back here tomorrow.